This episode is brought to you by Private Internet Access. Get protected with the only no-log VPN tested in court against the FBI. Go to gog.show/VPN, sign up today, and get protected.
Grumpy Old Geeks, a weekly talk show hosted by Brian Schulmeister and Jason DeFilippo, discussing the finer points of what went wrong on the internet and who's to blame.
Welcome to Grumpy Old Geeks. I'm Jason DeFilippo.
And I'm Brian Schulmeister.
I was wondering where you went. Okay, a little slow this morning. Do you have another night?
A little slow this morning. No, I just, I don't even know what happened to me anymore. I'm just tired, Jason. I'm just tired.
You're an old man.
I'm an old man these days, an old dad. But here I am, and I'm good, and we've got some follow-up. So I spent this morning with about my phone going crazy with robocalls. Shocking. And as we talked about, our country is going to try to do something about it. Thank God. Finally, there's some different things going through the House and the Senate that hopefully will help out. But of course, because we can't really ever have any nice things, our favorite person, Ajit Pai, of course, the FCC chairman, said this month that the commission would vote on a measure allowing phone companies such as AT&T and Verizon Communications to analyze network traffic to spot and block certain robocalls without running afoul of federal rules. So, you know, we're getting another, they're basically deputizing the communications companies to go ahead and start to block these things as well. Hopefully. However,
where's that other shoe?
Yeah, some businesses fear it could result in carriers also blocking automated calls from legitimate firms. Banks, collection agencies, and merchants say automated calls are crucial, even though some consumers may find them annoying. So representatives from these trade bodies that lobby on behalf of debt collectors, banks, and healthcare providers and other businesses are meeting with the FCC officials and urging them to delay the vote and instead seek public comment.
Here's my public comment. All of those agencies that you just rattled off, those are all the people I don't want calling me. That's it.
Yes, but they do have legitimate reasons to be calling you because they want their monies. So it's a there are reasons to have these robocalls. So there should be a little bit of a way to kind of detect the differences between legitimate businesses that are doing it and spam stuff. So I'm fine with that. But the thing that I find funny is that they want to seek public comment because we all know how well FCC's systems for public commenting work.
Exactly. You got to die before they actually listen to you.
And it's mostly all spammed stuff anyways. They rigged the system as we knew last time around.
If you're not dead or Russian, nobody listens to you at the FCC.
So we'll see what happens there. I'm happy there's movement. There's a movement from the FCC side of things. There's movement from the House and the Senate. So something's got to happen because, like I said, my phone is useless. Like, it's basically useless because we get so many of these robocalls these days.
I'm fine with that. I just don't answer the phone by anybody that's not in my contact list. It's simple enough with that.
That's where we're all at with that these days. Now, we have some more follow-up on Amazon. Now, remember, there was this huge contest that they ran for their HQ2 that basically involved cities bending over backwards to take it up the butt to have Amazon come move there, right? So people got super pissed off about this, particularly the New York City version of this, because the amount of political subsidies and city subsidies and et cetera, that the project was that Amazon was basically going to be paid to open up an office in New York. And
everybody kind of
freaked
ridiculous.
Out about this, so they backed away. Yeah, they backed away from it, thankfully. Now what we're finding out is, of course, Amazon is going to go ahead and move there anyways. Now, the space isn't going to be quite as big as their HQ2 project, but they're still going to New York, thus proving that you don't need to give these companies these insane subsidies just to move there. They're going anyways.
Yep. Save your money, people. If they want to come, they're going to come no matter what.
Exactly.
So I got a little follow-up on space junk. Mm-hmm. Pew, pew, pew.
Are we shooting it out of the sky?
No, we're actually going to be using different techniques, but this is an article from last year that I missed.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this hat tip to Aerodork on Twitter, one of my favorite Twitter accounts. And they said that this was one of the, you know, most underreported news stories of last year that was super important. Now, there is a company that's out there that is trying to get these things out of orbit. And they're coming up with novel ways to do it. They're trying different things. So they sent up this satellite called Remove Debris. And
catchy name.
Yeah. Really says what it does there right there on the tin, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's video in this article about of them actually trying out a net. So they sent up their satellite and they launched it from the ISS and they spit out a test satellite that they could capture and, you know, try and deorbit. And they did with a big old net They just threw a net at it.
So fishing in the space, in the sky.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of the same way that people are getting drones out of the sky. They're just going to try and do
it. Maybe that's great for capturing it, but then what happens?
Well, then you you can use that to deorbit it.
You bring it in to your thing and then bring that down. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly all the technicals on it, but they're starting to find out ways to do this stuff. But,
well, good.
It's a simple solution. Simple, low cost. Because they were talking about space harpoons, too. And I'm like, that's cool and all. But happens when harpoon hits it and then it spits out the little tiny pieces that come out? You know,
that doesn't seem well thought out to me. Space harpoons.
Unless it's just a big plunger on a rope, you know.
Shit in space.
Except you're in a vacuum. So I guess a plunger wouldn't really work.
There's that.
Yeah, there really is that. Oops, didn't think about that. But it's, you know, unless we come up with space eagles to get it out of the sky, like we're doing with drones over in Europe. But it's cool that some people are still doing stuff on it. I recommend going to check out this article. It'll be linked in the show notes because the video is pretty cool.
In the news.
We've talked in the past about Spotify going after Apple. In the App Store and how there's these issues with payments and how, you know, Apple runs their own little world there and you have to pay to play.
Right.
And Spotify's going after it. Well, Apple has launched a new page on their website called dedicated to the best store experience for everyone. And it's under principles and practices.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a chance to flip through this site or mini site, as it were?
I scanned through it very quickly. It's very pretty.
It's very pretty. It looks very Apple-y. And, you know, of course, they're spitting out all of their stats. And this is all the stuff that we do for you, you ungrateful curs.
Us. We are a store that welcomes competition.
Yeah, except for the fact that you can't set any defaults on the damn iPhone, except for Apple apps.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting thing. And people are pushing back against this, saying that, yeah, you know what? You kind of defeated your own purpose here and gave us all the ammunition we need by putting this page up.
This is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. You guys don't get it, do you? This is what we're mad about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of cute that Apple is coming out swinging, but they're swinging in the wrong direction.
Yeah, that may not have been the best idea there. But hey, you know, they're dedicated, right?
They are dedicated. We're going to see how this shakes out in the coming months and years, I'm sure.
Now, every now and then when I'm browsing around looking for stories to talk about on the show, it always catches my eye when somebody uses one of our own taglines. So here's the title of this article: Sell Your Data, Earn Passive Income. What could go wrong?
Yep.
Now, obviously, this article is going to be right in our wheelhouse. I thought this was interesting. So market researchers at PwC, that's PricewaterhouseCoopers, estimate that in 2018, companies that collect personal data to use for targeted advertising brought in $178 billion in revenue. Data brokers last year earned a further $21 billion, and these numbers are only trending up, obviously. By 2025, PwC expects the global data economy to be worth more than $400 billion.
Wow, that's a lot of datas.
That's a lot of monies for a lot of datas, yeah. So the theory is it's about time we get in on the action, and we should be able to sell our own data and earn passive income. So here comes a whole bunch of companies dedicated to doing that. The so-called Data Exchange, a new breed of tech startup promising to cut us in on the share of the vast wealth being created by the sale of our personal data. They are billing themselves as disruptors of a top-heavy and exploitative industry. These companies promise to build platforms where we can collect, store, and ultimately sell our own browser histories, Fitbit analytics, bank statements, Instagram posts, Spotify habits, and all the other data points that drop from us all the time. So, great. Each startup in this economy has staked out their own particular niche. There's a couple already. Streamer wants to let you sell data in real time. Every lane change in your Tesla and adjustment to your smart thermostat can be added to the aggregated data sets it will offer to corporations on a subscription basis. There's another company, and I do love this name, Universal Basic Data Income.
Oh, God.
Which is bringing all the analytics in-house and selling only insights it can glean from its users' data rather than giving the data away itself, which I kind of like that idea better than the other options, but I don't really like any of these. And then there's another one called Ocean Protocol, which is on a mission to sell your data to AI companies, equalizing access to data for all, its website announces. So IBM and Microsoft won't be the only companies with access to massive stockpiles of our personal information. Everyone will get them now.
You get my data. You get my data. You get my data.
Yes. And in return, you'll get some crypto tokens that might be someday worth something if enough of us decide to join these things and sell our access, because these markets don't actually exist yet. I'm sure these companies are getting tons of funding for something that doesn't exist yet. A number of these companies have launched. Data is only valuable in aggregate, so these startups will need to attract a lot more users before they can start compensating people in any kind of meaningful way. So it's coming, people.
Well, here's the funny thing. I guess all of these people read Jaron Lanier's book, because he talks about this in his last book that we reviewed. Was it the, I can't remember if it was the like 10 Reasons to Quit Social Media book that he talked about this? It was that one? Okay. Yeah. I'll dig that up and put a link in the show notes. If you haven't read that book, I recommend everybody listening to the show go read that book. It's fantastic. But this is one of the ideas that he staked out there. And apparently a couple people have read the book and are jumping on it.
Yep. They did. They name checked him quite often in the article, actually. So.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
And then I found another one that says what we've been saying all the time. We should opt into data tracking, not out of it, says DuckDuckGo CEO Gabe Weinberg.
Yeah, okay.
There's not really much else to add to that, because we've talked about it to death here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the DuckDuckGo guy. We know that. He's all about this.
But, I mean, his point in this conversation, this is a conversation with Kara Swisher over at Recode, and his point was, instead of waiting for a comprehensive privacy bill to work its way through Congress over the many and many, many years that it'll take, he's proposing a small, simple tweak to U.S. regulations, basically putting in an opt-out. That's it. He says that'll fix everything.
No, it won't.
Well, it would if it could actually be adopted, but it'll never be adopted. So
exactly. And even if it's adopted, can you actually trust them to do what they say they're going to do?
Then we get into what does delete really mean again, that argument. Yeah,
so, things like that.
Yep.
Now, I found this one on TechCrunch this morning, which I thought was pretty cool. Uber Eats micromobility services are growing faster than Uber's core ride hailing business.
So they're pivoting.
Yeah, well, they just have a bunch of irons in the fire with their Uber Eats and their scooters and all that kind of thing. But it's interesting that their side hustles have grown 230% in the last year, or actually just Q1, and ride sharing grew just 22%. And I'm looking at that, and what that just tells me is people just want to stay home and bring me some shit. I don't want to go out.
There is a lot of that. I mean, that's kind of what's happening right now. Like you just see it with Postmates, the rise of all these different services that basically just bring everything to you instead of you going out into the world to forage for it yourself.
It's the Deliveroo economy.
It really is these days.
Yeah, except skip DoorDash. We'll talk about them in a little bit in security, but I hate those guys. Have yet to get an actual meal on time that hasn't been flipped upside down and shaken, not stirred. Oh, this is a head scratcher here. I thought you might get a kick out of this. Cameo, the celebrity shout out startup, nears a $300 million valuation.
Yeah, I've been aware of this company for a while. It's kind of like a side hustle for celebrities.
Yep. You can go and pay the celebrity a couple bucks, and they will do a little video shout out for you, or an audio shout out. You tell them what you want, and they'll either accept it or deny it, and then they'll make a little video for you. And, you know, they can go up to, I think the most expensive one I saw was Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank. He was $999 for a shout out. You can get Tony Hawk for like $150. And I think Charlie Sheen is like $275, which is probably his only income right now.
Probably.
There's a lot of people on here, though, that are, you know, famous folks. But, you know, these things are really not huge money. It's like Caitlyn Jenner's bringing in $2,500 a week. And of course, the company takes 25% of that.
Of course.
And, you know, another Real Housewife brings in $2,800 a week. How is this worth $300 million?
Yeah, that's you think I have an answer for you? I don't. I don't understand valuations of any of these things. They make no sense whatsoever. It's a great idea, but I mean, it's never going to be a gazillion dollar business, especially it's just not, because at some point, to make the kind of money to be a $300 million company, they would have to have basically every celebrity known to man. And the pricing would just go outrageous, like to the point where nobody's going to pay $5,000 for a 30-second video from somebody. No one.
I know. It's ridiculous.
It's unsustainable. So It's a cute idea. It's clever. It's I know like Gina Grad does that. She's from the Adam Carolla Newsgirl. She's up on it. You know, we could be up on this in theory. I don't think anybody would pay $5 to have us say hello.
Yeah, so I don't think that we would actually make it through the vetting process because you have to, I think, be a celebrity to be on there.
All right,
yeah. Nobody's going to give us $5 to say Deliveroo or shit's broken, you know?
Yeah, I suppose. But I mean, you know, I'm looking through the list of celebrities and I've not heard of half of these people. So.
Oh, yeah. No,
I don't know who any of these people are.
No, not of our generation. But if we had a budget, it would be fun to go through here and get everybody to say, you're listening to Grumpy Old Geeks.
Oh, you know? Hey, good idea.
Yeah. It's a really cool platform if you need, you know, celebrity bumpers for your podcast. Mm-hmm. But it's going to add up real fast.
I bet there's legalese in here about not being able to use them for commercial purposes.
I doubt that. It's a deal between you and the celebrity. So.
All right. Okay.
We'll see. Hey, man, we got a few bucks lying around sometime after we try and go to the burrito extravaganza for what was it, Cholula? You know, we got to set aside that $60 to go to the burrito experience.
Well, we'll have Bug Hall, the actor from The Little Rascals, tell everybody how much he loves Grumpy Old Geeks for $25.
There we go. All right. And Uber is going to start deactivating riders with low ratings. Now, this is a thing that I thought they were already doing. This is why I thought this was so strange that this was making the news this week. I mean, I guess if you have a low rating on Uber.
What would be the point in having the ratings if you weren't going to do something with them? So, yes, I assume this was already happening as well.
Well, the drivers can see your rating when they accept your ride. So they can, you know, basically on their side say it.
Yeah,
they can choose not to pick you up if you're a 3. Say, oh, this guy's an asshole. He's going to puke all over the back of my car. I'm not picking him up. So it was based on the driver. But now their Uber is literally going to pull you from the app if you're an asshole. So I guess it's a step in the right direction, but.
Yeah, it makes sense. And why not? I mean, it should be that way. I think it's interesting that drivers can be pulled if they fall below 4.6. That's not hard to get under.
I call bullshit on the 4.6 because I've been with some 2s before that are just like, there's no way you should be driving for this company.
This did make me go look at my own rating because I'd never looked at it before. Guess what my rating is, Jason?
I'm guessing you're either a 4.9 or a 5.
I am a 5.
Yep, I'm a 5 too. Yep. So I'm a nice guy. I say nice things to the people.
If you're a nice guy, at least in an Uber. That's about all we could verify right now.
That's true. Yeah, if they came on the podcast, I'd give them hell. But when I'm in somebody else's car, I'm a nice guy. What are you going to say?
Mm-hmm. So I have a little more information about the FCC and things going on there. Some news. I thought this was interesting because we're all talking about the coming use of 5G. And we don't think too much about bandwidth uses on this. So right now there's a conflict brewing over the spectrum band, radio, TV, cell phone, satellite, submarines, Wi-Fi, and any other device that can send or receive messages do so using specific portions of the electromagnetic spectrum to prevent interference between different types of devices. The problem is we're running out of room for both old and new technologies because we have to keep the older technologies working. Things like weather forecasting uses the band between 23.6 and 24 gigahertz. But in recent years, telecommunications companies have been eyeing the band around 24 gigahertz for 5G use. Now, this could be a problem because there will be bleed over. And
somebody's apparently broadcasting on your frequency. That's why you can't speak today.
I think so. My brainwaves are being hacked. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration told the House Science Committee earlier this month that interference from neighboring bands from this 5G proposal could result in 77% data loss.
That's a lot.
This will cause immediate effects like limiting our ability to predict and track developing storms and cascading ones, like the potential for government agencies to halt the launch of new satellites since many of them would no longer be effective. So, let's look at this a little cautiously, shall we?
We should, for sure. But yes. Will they?
No.
Because remember, the FCC is kind of the worst government agency that we have right now.
It is pretty bad.
I mean, of course, besides the executive branch, but besides that's splitting hairs.
Now, I found a really interesting story that was kind of music related, but it was more we're just a platform. And, you know, I love the we're just a platform argument. Lil Nas X. I'm sure you're aware of him, Jason. I think you can. Didn't you buy something from him off Cameo just the other day?
Oh, I've got all of his dope vinyl in my.
Well,
collection.
Apparently he's everywhere with this song called "Old Town Road." It's the top single in North America and has been for the last several weeks. And it has, an all-important banjo sample in it. It's the thing that gives the song its essential vibe. He didn't write it. He bought it from a company called BeatStars, a site based out of Austin, Texas, that sells beats to performers for bargain prices. They have over 1 million customers in 160 countries. They make approximately around $40 million a year. And creators of the beats have things licensed on their behalf, so if anything comes out of their beats, they get a piece of the action. According to Rolling Stone, there's a dancehall producer in Albania who's bringing in over $40,000 a month just based on the beats that he writes and the different music bits that he puts up there, and people then purchase and license. So Lil Nas X bought this banjo beat from BeatStars for $30. Awesome, right? No. The beat was created by a teenager in the Netherlands named Kiawi Rakumi, who works under the name Young Kio. And he stole the banjo loop from Nine Inch Nails. It was on a track called 34 Ghosts, which appears on the disc 4 of the 2008 instrumental album Ghosts 1 through 4. He put a beat under the loop and then put it up on BeatStars, hoping that they would be able to sell it for him. Well, that's the one that Lil Nas X bought. So now this illegal stolen thing is part of one of the biggest hits in the world right now. So what happens?
Yeah. Where do we go from here?
Well, Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross, released 34 Ghosts under Creative Commons, which means you're allowed to take it and use it, but not for anything commercial. So this kid couldn't put it up for sale, and Lil Nas X couldn't take it and use it to make money. So the copyright's been infringed. So what's going to happen now? Already the songwriting credits have changed to list Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, and I'm sure there will be money and record label sort of stuff going on now. But it does. This is the thing. This is the same thing that you see with YouTube and all of these things. When these people just build a platform and they vet nothing, right? They just don't vet anything, and you can't do that. But I guarantee you, if I went to BeatStars right now and just started going through stuff, I'm sure we could find gazillions of things that are just lifted and stolen, slightly tweaked.
Slightly tweaked. Yeah, that's the thing. Where does it get to the point where it becomes a new work of art?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. To ask your wife. She's the music lawyer. She should probably know.
She is aware of this.
Okay. Yeah, because the Ghosts album was licensed under Creative Commons by NCSA. Mm-hmm. So that is basically non-commercial. So there you go. Share alike, which means if you do anything with it, you have to share it back, which means you are allowed to adapt, remix, transform, and build upon the material. But the non-commercial aspect is where the kid went. Yeah, that's where the kid went afoul. So he's the one that should be on the hook for actually putting it out there to sell. So this kid is the one that should be having to pay for it.
Yep.
Honestly. But I am not a lawyer, nor do I play one on the internet nor television. I just make shit up as I see it.
That's right.
We'll see how this one plays out. In very interesting news, we've been talking about our good friends over at Salesforce.com for a while now, and our good buddy Mark Benioff.
Yeah, you really had it out for him recently. He's like your bird.
Yeah, he's such a hypocrite. Drives me crazy. It's like, I love my town. This is the greatest town. And really, he says that with one hand. In the other hand, he's systematically destroying the culture of San Francisco. But what are you going to do? Well, Salesforce.com, they have a big thing on their website saying Camping World is one of our leading customers using our software. And Camping World spends about $1 million a year on Salesforce. Mm-hmm. Well, Camping World's contract is probably not going to be renewed because Salesforce now has decided that they have a no gun policy. And Camping World sells guns because sometimes when you're camping, you want to go hunting.
Yep.
You know, that's kind of the way it goes. So, yeah. This is an interesting one because they're not going to be allowed to probably renew their contract unless they stop selling guns, or they're going to have to spend a couple $1 million changing over to another software vendor. And I'm curious, before I say anything, I'm curious about your take on this. What do you think?
Open market. That's fine with me. Salesforce can make their own policies if they want to. We've allowed places like Hobby Lobby and all that sort of stuff to do that in their own ways. It's not infringing on anybody's rights, and Camping World can just easily move on to what's the stupid monkey one?
The monkey one?
Yeah, the emailing program, whatever the hell.
Yeah,
that
but that's completely different software. This is CRM. Whatever. This is a CRM software. Yeah, MailChimp is email marketing. Okay. It's not CRM.
Well, whatever. Completely different. Okay, so they can go to something else. There's plenty of these companies about. I think it's stupid for Salesforce to do it. I think they're pardon the pun, shooting themselves in the foot. But they can do whatever they want. It's their company.
Yeah, I guess. It just seems very, when you're like the top of the market and you just start making these weird arbitrary rules, who's going to trust you in the future?
Well, like, that's why I say they're shooting themselves in the foot. As a company, you're welcome to make stupid decisions. It is a stupid decision.
That's true. Yes, yeah. The market forces do not preclude stupid decisions.
No, not at all. So we see it all the time. We always, new Coke. I mean, come on.
Well, which is coming back, by the way.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, silly. And speaking of stupid companies doing stupid things, let's talk about the North Face for a second.
Okay.
Have you seen this one?
No, I have not. No.
Okay, so the North Face, I just love this one. So they use Leo Burnett as their ad agency.
Okay.
And Leo Burnett said, hey, we've got an idea. Let's try and get you to the top of Google Images. And how are we going to do that? Well, when people go on a trip, they generally Google the place that they're going to go. And they're going to look at pictures. And then we want your pictures with your gear to be at the top of Google image results. Well, some genius over at Leo Burnett, is Leo Burnett TaylorMade is the full name, but I would just call them Leo Burnett from now on, said, hey, look, all the top images in Google search are the Wikipedia images.
Right.
So Leo Burnett, in a genius move, they sent photographers around the world to get pictures of people in all these crazy locations in Brazil to say, just to make beautiful photos. And then they went to Wikipedia and swapped out the images that were there for theirs. And of course, then they got to the top of Google Images. And instead of just letting it be and sitting back and saying, hey, look what we did for you, they decided to make a video and put it up on Ad Age. And that's when the shit hit the fan.
This is, first off, it's genius. Genius. This is the exact kind of hacking and marketing we would have done back in the day. Exactly what we would have done back in the day.
But here's the thing. It's not genius because there's a reason nobody does this, because this is what's going to happen when you do shit like that. I would have been the one in the room saying, you can't do that. We're going to get eviscerated. And then the marketing
guys
are
going to get eviscerated because they fucking bragged about it. If they would have shut up, it would have been fine.
But here's the other shoe on this one. The marketing geniuses say, well, we might get eviscerated. We can apologize, but then we stay in the news cycle for 3 more days. And how much more press are we going to get out of that?
There you go.
Yep. Let's manufacture these images, put them on Wikipedia, and then we're just going to leak it that we did it. And then we're going to manufacture outrage. And then we're going to apologize. We're going to do the right thing, saying, oh, mea culpa, sorry. And then we get 3 more days of free advertising everywhere in the world, which they're getting on our show right now, even. And then they walk away. They walk away looking like the good guys because we're sorry. And, they're even sending people to Wikipedia now to go and learn the purpose and the whole thing of what Wikipedia is.
Yeah. This is the world we've made for ourselves.
Well, it's just, oh, man, it's just.
I think it's genius. I think that everything that they did was genius. And, they exploited some open holes that, they shouldn't have done it, but they did it. And it's genius.
Yeah. Fortunately, I don't shop for North Face, but even if I did, I wouldn't now.
Right.
And of course, Leo Burnett TaylorMade is not going to get any blowback on this. They're going to be like, see what we did for our client. And if they get a sales report from the North Face saying that sales went up after this whole thing blew over, it's just a feather in their hat, which I'm guessing it will because people are dumb.
Genius hack. Very, very clever. Very clever.
Security? Ha!
We're back this week with Dave Bittner from the CyberWire podcast. The CyberWire is a free, community-driven cybersecurity news service based in Maryland. where they probably still don't have a government in Baltimore. Dave is also the co-host of the Hacking Humans podcast, along with Joe Kerrigan, where they take on social engineering, which somebody used probably to take down the city of Baltimore.
There you
anyway.
Go. Yeah.
It all comes full circle.
It's all Skittles and rainbows here in Maryland. The rainbows after the tornadoes. We had another set of tornadoes yesterday.
Mm. God hates you.
Something's going on. Something's going on. I don't know. But yeah, it's bad. Yeah. Well, like I feel like I say this every week. The weather's broken. And yes. It is. So
it's still chilly here.
still sweater time out there.
Well, let's not go crazy. We kind of more drape a hoodie around us slightly, you know.
Oh, the humanity.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, over here we have, oh, the humanity. There you have, oh, the humidity.
That is true. That is true. We have the humidity for sure. I wanted to kick things off this week with an article that I've been thinking a lot about since I read it. This is from over on Medium, a company called 10. And the article is, this ID scanner company is collecting sensitive data on millions of bar goers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the three of us are all of similar age.
Yes.
And it's been a long time since I was since I hung around in bars, I have to admit. It's been even longer time since anyone really took an active interest in carding me. But my recollection was, when I was, let's say, college age, is that you'd go to a bar, you'd hand them your driver's license, bouncer would look at driver's license, look at you, you know, nod, whatever, and in you'd go.
Yes.
And that's all fine and good, right? I mean, we're checking to make sure we're the right age, or we're checking to make sure there's $5 under your driver's license so that the bouncer will let you in when you're underage.
Under your fake driver's license, yes.
Right.
Yes.
It's all good. I guess I hadn't really connected that this has evolved. And now there's this company called Patron Scan, I guess is the way you say it. And they have a system for scanning your driver's license and checking to make sure that it's authentic, but it also connects with other bars and establishments that are part of this Patron Scan system.
Mm-hmm.
And if one of these places wants to basically blacklist you, you can get blacklisted from all of them.
Well, it's been a whole 12 hours since I've been in a bar. So it's been a long time. I still frequent my local quite often. I make friends there. I've been around a lot. Now, I don't stay out late much anymore. I'm not there when they actually have lines and they're checking IDs and whatnot. But I do know that they have basic
scanners.
You're
there
for
the early bird special.
Yes, yeah. I'm the old man at the bar. That's my thing these days. That's my gig. But they have scanners now because obviously IDs are not what they used to be. Our IDs have barcodes and everything. So it's very simple to process to scan them now to verify age and all that sort of thing. And obviously bars have blacklists. They always do. There are people
I'm on many of them.
Jason is on many. I have never been blacklisted at a bar.
Let me just chime in here and say I was not aware that bars had blacklists.
They do.
Well,
they yes.
No,
they do.
This is how little I
have.
Anyway, go
had
on.
Friends that have been blacklisted and appealed
okay.
for months to get back into the bar's good graces. People do stupid shit and they will get, you know, it's very easy to get blacklisted from a bar. Basically, all you have to do is put your hand on any woman that works there and you will never be back into that bar again.
Oh, interesting.
So things of that nature.
To clarify, I've never done that. I have never done that. That is not why I've been blacklisted. But stupid shit is my middle name, but that is not the reason.
Right. Well, it even says it on your ID, Jason, which is probably why they don't need this system to stop you from coming in.
Yeah.
Jason, stupid shit DeFilippo.
Yeah. Yeah.
The technology has definitely advanced. It's very, very easy to keep out underage drinkers. And, you know, the blacklisting thing has always been kind of more of an informal thing amongst the bar owners, the bar workers, and the people that they hire for the door. I have a very weird feeling about this kind of connected network because you did something stupid in one bar once and God knows what the story was. The fact that you would then be barred from other bars is kind of draconian to me and a little bit frightening. Yeah.
I think it's also ripe for a class action lawsuit.
That is definitely true. Now, I'm assuming you would just get, look, even I might be breaking some news to you guys. Even restaurants keep notes on customers. If you're a recurring customer at a restaurant, there are notes saying, you know, very nice or bad tipper or things of that nature. People keep track of these things. They always have. They've always been self-contained, though, and the idea of it becoming a network is what's really frightening. I'm assuming that they would just see some sort of almost like an Uber rating of somebody or something of that nature, and the bar would be able to make their own decision as to whether or not they let them in or not. But it's still, I don't like this at all.
Yeah, we've actually covered software on the show before that restaurants can buy that will like manage all of that stuff for, you know, this person wants this seat. This is their favorite dish. This is their favorite wine and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But we didn't, I don't think we went down the dark rabbit hole of, yeah, this guy is just a bad tipper or he's mean to the wait staff or things like that. I guess they could just put it in the notes field. And
they do. Well, they just put it in the notes field. It's human nature. Of course you would do such things.
But that's part of the story here is that if someone misbehaves, according to the story, the staffer can flag their ID in the system and tag them. And this patron scan has a list of bad things, including assault, disturbance, drug possession, drug trafficking, fake ID, fighting, gang violence, public intoxication, sexual assault, well, theft,
public intoxication. That's the point of being there.
Exactly. I was just like, isn't that the whole point of your
I've
establishment,
I've never understood
sir?
That. Now, yeah. I get overserved, but...
but the thing that they're flagging here is that a large percentage of these get tagged with simply private, which could mean anything. Could mean that they grab someone. Could mean that the proprietor of this bar doesn't like Irish people. You know,
right?
Like, yeah. Who knows?
No, I think Jason's right. I think Jason's spot on. This is ripe for class action lawsuit at some point because it's a very murky system, isn't it?
Well, and the other thing I thought of was, what if back in the day when folks were checking our IDs manually, if in addition to looking at your ID, the bouncer took out a camera and took a picture of your ID and then handed it back to you? Would you be okay with that?
Of course not.
Absolutely not.
Right. And that's basically what they're doing here.
Yeah, because those barcodes on the back have a ton of information in them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this got me thinking. So as I said, I've been thinking a lot about this. And what I was wondering is... is there a use case, or can an argument be made for an ID that verifies your age but does not include any of your other personal information, doesn't have your address on it?
Yeah, a case can be made for it. Who's going to make it?
Right.
Yeah. And that doesn't seem to be the direction we're going as a society either, is it? It's
no,
more information, not less. You know, there's the real ID that they were talking about for a while that wasn't a driver's license, but it was an ID. But I'm sure that has all the information as well. You know, I would never go to a bar that had this. If they installed patron scan, I'd be like, no, thank you. I will be taking my drunkenness elsewhere.
Right. And is there a EULA when you're handing them the ID that says we are going to take your license and let you in the bar, but we're going to keep all the information on your license?
Right.
There's no consent given for them to take your information and hold it, which is what they're doing, which also comes back to case for class action lawsuit.
I particularly like the fact that they say in this article, patron scan doesn't provide any personal data to third parties besides law enforcement. That's a yet, of course, because we all know that what happens, because that's going to be a whole nother income stream for them. And the customer shouldn't worry about future changes to that policy because the data has no monetary value to third parties. Bullshit. It doesn't have monetary values to third parties.
Right. Right.
Of course it has monetary value to third parties. You're getting very detailed information about people and where they go and their regular patterns. That is exceedingly valuable information.
Yeah. Yes. If I started an Irish bar down the street from Brian's bar and I can buy the information on who goes to his bar, you know, his local, and I can then, you know, figure out
targeted
where they're at, I target them and say, here, check out our new bar. Here's 10% off or 20% off Guinness tonight. Come on down.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's extremely valuable information.
Yep. And also a component of this is them making the information available to law enforcement. It sounds like many of these places have a kind of a cozy relationship with the local law enforcement.
Well, bars do. They have to.
Yeah, they have
to. Yeah. No, that part I understand. But I guess it's, as we come back to over and over again here, it's one thing if a police officer comes and says, here's the warrant I have for all the information you have on Brian. Do you have anything? And please share with me what you have. It's another thing for the police officer to walk up and say, hey, will you log into your patron scan? I just want to poke around in here and see what's going on.
Yeah. Can you give me a list of everybody that was here on Tuesday?
Right. Yep. Right. Yeah. Very different thing. So
I agree. I'm fully against this. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I can see the commercial in my head of the law firm that is starting the class action lawsuit that you would see like on Judge Judy. It's like, have you been an asshole but think you're wrongfully accused? Did you accidentally touch the server's butt but you didn't mean to and then you got banned? Well, right. Call Douche and Douche Law Firm and we're going to get you some money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This is troubling, this sort of stuff.
I wonder where it's going to go. I wonder where it's going to go.
You know, full surveillance all the time. That's where it's going.
And this isn't new. This has been, I've been seeing like, you know, it's been at least like 6 or 7 years that I've seen these scanners at bars. So they've been amassing data for a while.
Have you really? I've never seen one. I've never seen one of these.
In San Francisco, they're all over the place. Okay. Yeah. Hmm. In this Chicago, I've seen style? Them. It's kind of like a handheld credit card scanner with a little laser on the front. So you can either like,
They've got those everywhere, but those aren't necessarily connected. Generally, those just check age, and that's that. So,
well, the ones I looked pretty much like they were connected. Okay. It wasn't just a basic.
How can
thing.
You tell?
Yeah. How can you tell? You got to look for the patron scan logo, I guess.
Well, the antenna on the side of it was kind of a giveaway.
Oh, you and your details.
I know. What are you going to do? So this article was sent to us by a couple hundred people. In the middle of the night, do you know who your iPhone is talking to? This is over at the Washington Post, and it's an article about trackers on your phones and when apps phone home while you're taking a nap.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the data that is, like, all these apps that are running in the background and all of the crap that they're sending out. Did you guys get a chance to look at this one?
Oh, I did. Yeah. It made me very upset.
See, this comes back to me. It's another meh. You kind of figured this is going to be happening all the time.
Well, I had this sent to me by hundreds of people. I think what is troubling here is, for me anyway, is that this is obviously abuse of Apple's background refresh functionality. That Apple's not yet cracked down on it. And
what's shocking to me is Apple hasn't come out and made a huge statement about this yet, because you can't go and have your advertising campaign right now being what happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone and then have this new story come out. You've got to do something. Now, I know their argument right now is, well, the stuff that we build doesn't do any of this. These are third party apps. These are that you're using, but that's not quite good enough.
And I will bet you that all of us have opted into all of this tracking when we installed the app and clicked I agree on the EULA.
Of course.
So, on my phone, I specifically go through and don't allow background refresh on any app. I'm kind of a stickler for that, except on the ones that I really need it for. But like, why does the Nike app need to be sending out my data? You know, it doesn't.
It does not.
The Weather Channel I can understand because they're pinging to get the weather currently. So when you open up your phone, you get the weather, but they don't need a ton of information. They do need your IP address and your location to geolocate you so they can give you the weather in your area. It's when they go above and beyond.
Wasn't the Weather Channel one of the ones that got busted in the past year or so for they were selling all of the location data to a third party?
Yes. I used to have the Weather Channel app on my iPad and deleted it after that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I wonder if this ties into the same time that Byron Allen bought the Weather Channel. He could be the villain. Because God knows that Byron Allen's talk shows were a travesty against humanity. So maybe he's upped his game and now he's into the data brokering racket.
Could be. Wasn't he on like Real People or one of those?
Yep. Yeah, he was on Real People. And then he had a late night talk show that was one of the worst things ever. It should have been like condemned by The Hague as a war crime. It was so bad.
This might be one of our best tangents ever, people.
Yeah.
He seemed like a nice enough guy, but I agree. His show wasn't that good.
Well, Jason has two nemesis right now, Byron Allen and the guy from Salesforce.
That's it. Mark Benioff and Byron Allen. What do these two have in common?
Yeah.
Jason hates them.
Put them in one of those wrestling cage matches together and see who comes out alive.
Which no talent asshole will win?
Okay.
Yeah, so this is disturbing. Yeah, I think we all just kind of have to be more like Jason, and I can't believe I just said that. Through and switch off background app refreshing on a lot of these. It's just shocking because I'm sure, yes, of course, it's all in the EULA, but so many of these basic apps that you think would just get the information that they need, they're just trying to slurp up absolutely everything for no reason.
Because they can. Yeah. Because they can. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I think the point is excellent that, yes, you can go through the privacy settings and disable them. But to the point that you just made, it's reasonable to think that, oh, the Weather Channel app, yeah, well, they need to know where I am to deliver me the weather. And there's no real way to know that that's all they're doing. And that's a problem. Yeah,
that's the problem, is you don't know. It's either all or nothing, right? It's either on or off. You can't go in and selectively set up different things. And to your point, Jason, Nike needs that information because they do things like track your workouts. So they have to get some information too, right?
It's in the background. No, if you're going on a workout, then you have the app in the forefront, don't you?
I don't know.
I have my phone is tracking my steps all the time because I try to get in my steps throughout the day. So I could see a sports app doing that sort of thing in the background.
Possibly. But I go with a zero trust model on every app. I give them as little as possible. So that's just when I install something new, I check it and just turn off the things because I always have to go and turn notifications on, make sure that there's or customize the notification so it doesn't bug me and all that. So, but while I'm doing it, I always check all that stuff. And it started out with battery life. It wasn't even about privacy. I just got in the habit of it because the battery life was so bad on the old phones that you always turn that stuff off. And I got in the habit of doing it. And now it turns out that was a good idea because of just the privacy implications. But, you know, if you get in the habit of it, every time you install a new app, just go see what it does and make sure that it needs to do those things. And if it does, then guess what? They might be taking your datas. And then someday you might have universal basic data income and can get rich on the blockchain.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Well, I have a feeling the next time I'm sitting on my toilet with my Amazon Echo Show sitting right there next to me, looking at me, I will be spending some time taking care of my app permissions.
When you're having a peek-a-poo.
When I'm having a peek-a-poo. That's in a different segment, Dave. You missed that.
Yes. It actually comes after this segment. So
it's right after this, the order that we're going in. So a little teaser there, everyone.
The continuum is broken. Oh,
time machine. Yeah.
So we've been talking a lot about really bad things that are happening with privacy. Now I've got an actual rare decent thing. Amazon has responded to a lot of the brouhaha about finding out that voice commands were being stored and laughed at in private forums from Amazon and things of that nature. So they've rolled out a new feature as of this week that you will be able to say, Alexa, delete everything I said today, and it will wipe all voice recordings made from midnight that day until the moment. In a few weeks, they'll be rolling out, delete what I just said, and it will expunge voice recordings of your most recent request specifically. So the next time you go, Alexa, how do I kill my wife? You can go, Alexa, delete what I just said after you got the answer.
Now, here's the thing. Can't you just set that as a default, maybe? No.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? That would be nice.
Yeah, this is opt-in, opt-out, not opt-in. You have to actually say it.
But on the plus side, you could do an if this then that kind of thing for yourself that made a nighttime thing that you could just say and then add that to the little list of things for it to do. But of course, they can't just make it that easy for you. And the big thing being...
There's a thing here. Now, if you say, Alexa, delete what I just said, does it save Alexa, delete what I just said? And then in court, they can show that you said, Alexa, Infinity delete loop. What I just said. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're hidden into an affinity loop. Yes.
I'm telling you, the prosecutor can go, what did you say that needed to be expunged so rapidly?
Yes. I think Alexa needs amnesia mode.
Yeah.
Like private browsing, just like everything else. That would be nice. Yeah. And then, of course, there's always the question, what does delete really mean? Are you really just saying, Alexa, set all visibility to zero?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
You never
court
know.
Court order mode. That's what it is.
Lawyer
Bad
mode.
Bad hombre mode.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Well, this last one I have this week, yet another story about a bunch of user information leaked online or exposed online. This is 42 million dating app records exposed online, leaking user IP addresses and location data. This was over on Gizmodo, another publicly accessible database. And kind of what's interesting about this one is it was from a lot of dating apps, including Cougar Dating, Christian's Finder, yeah,
yes,
Mingler, Friends with Benefits, yes, and TS, which we assume or they speculate is probably short for transsexual.
Now, so, well, yes, yes. I think Mr. Jeremiah Fowler protests too much with that.
It could just be fans of T.S. Eliot.
I think he knows exactly what TS is.
It could just be fans of T.S. Eliot. You never know. Yes, but,
okay, that's true.
But a wide cross-section of people.
Yes, all over the map.
We actually, yeah, we talked about this over on the CyberWire last week, and we made the point that there's probably not a lot of crossover between Cougar Dating and Christian Finder, and I would like to do a little
cross data analysis of these sites.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. My point, I said I think you're giving the Christians too much credit.
Yeah.
But, oh well, and I can't help thinking of Mingler hearing Vincent Price. Remember the old thing with the Tingler?
Yeah.
The Tingler, it's the Tingler, in the theater, the Mingler. Yeah. So, other interesting things about this: they found a bunch of Chinese text in the database, which leads them to believe that whoever gobbled all this data up might be Chinese, although it wasn't in a U.S.-based server. So. I don't know. Not a whole lot to be done here, but it's just another example of be careful what you put out there on these dating sites, because it seems like a higher than average hit rate that these are some of the sites that get scooped up.
Yes. And that's my sense, anyway. Don't sign up for all of them. You know who you are.
Right. Well, you got to
casting a wide
odds.
Net.
You never know. The heart wants what the heart wants, Brian.
That's true. And the heart apparently wants everything for that dude.
That's right. That's right. I love T.S. Eliot. All right. Well, that's what I have. Yeah. They could just end it right there. But all right. That's what I have this week. I will talk to you guys next week. Have a good one.
You too.
Apps and doodads.
Brian, you're a fan of the Amazon Echo show, aren't you?
I do. I all my family has it. My in-laws, my sister, my mom. It's a great way for us all to stay in touch with each other, especially with the kiddos.
Those things were expensive when they came out, weren't they?
They were. They were. They were $300 or so.
Well, now you can get one for $90.
Of course you can.
Yeah.
It's much smaller.
the five and a half inch Echo Show for $90 has just been announced, and I'm thinking of picking some of these up for the family.
I think it's a great idea. We use them literally all the time, almost every day. We're talking to somebody with it, and like I said, with the kids, it's great. Like my kid will just pop up and talk to his niece and nephew now, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think a couple of these might be going out for birthday presents and things like that, or at least Christmas presents.
Yes.
Yeah. So, except I got to buy one for me now, and I got to con my roommate into letting me put it in the house.
I have a version one of the big one still, if you'd like it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll talk off the air. All right. But yeah, I think for $90, that's a no-brainer.
So. So you can take mine and buy $90 versions for your family and friends that you want to do voice chatting with. It's quite nice.
Cool. Yeah. And these new ones actually come with a camera shutter.
Smart, because they're definitely trying to convince you that this one should go in the bedroom from all their marketing materials, which will never happen. I will never put one of these in the bedroom.
I don't care if it's a physical shutter, you're still listening. So,
yep.
Yeah, definitely not. I want them to make that little round one with no camera. That's exactly that thing.
I would buy that in 2 seconds and that would go in my bedroom.
I'd put one in my bathroom and one in my bedroom.
Yep.
Because like in the morning, because I get up at like, this morning I got up at 3:30 and stumbled into the shower and I'm like, what time is it? Oh. So, yep. Okay, cool. Then we'll move on and I'll review those once we start getting them in. Now, Pokemon Go back in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. Pokemon Go has announced Pokemon Sleep.
Okay.
Yes, they actually want to start tracking your sleep with a new app called Pokemon Go +++. And it's a little doodad hee-haw goo-ga that you put in your bed that just tracks movement over the course of the night.
Okay.
And when you get enough, yeah, it's, you know, connects to your phone via Bluetooth and you get rewards when you sleep enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
I don't know why.
Why?
Why? Oh my God. See, now the only reason I think I really put this in here is because soon they're going to come out with a bathroom tracker
and they're going to call shit.
Nope. Peek-a-poo.
Peek-a-poo. Oh, there you go.
Peek-a-poo.
Could also be the name for the Alexa that you put in your bathroom.
That's true too. Yeah. When you forget to close the shutter, peek-a-poo.
Peek-a-poo. I think we have a show title.
There we go. So I'm sure a friend of the show, David Teeter, will be buying one of these because he's such a Pokemon Go fiend.
I just don't. I don't get it. I'm scratching my head on this. Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's what I don't get. We talked last week. I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but I know you and I talked about getting some software to use our swanky new iPads as mm-hmm. secondary monitors because I need more monitors and my desk is too small for another monitor. So right. instead of going out and buying, you know, the $700 new top for my desk, which I really want, but I can't afford, I spent $15 and went and got Duet Display. So it's just a nice piece of software. It's written by ex-Apple engineers. You plug your iPad into your computer and then you run the software and it basically AirPlays to like the second screen to it. It's really well done. It's really fast. And right now I'm running it on my iPad Pro under my iMac and it looks great. It works really well. And for $15, you can't go wrong. They do have upsells for other things and it does work for Mac and PC even.
Yes, I bought it as well. I've tested it out. I will use it when I travel. I don't really need it at home because I do have a nice little podcasting setup with enough screen space. But when I travel, it'll be fantastic. The only thing that bummed me out is you actually have to have it connected by the cable. You can't do it over Bluetooth or wireless or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm fine with that because then it's like charging the whole time too. So
that's true. It is a plus.
Yeah, it's definitely a plus. But for $15, it's a nice little app.
Works great. Works absolutely fantastic. My only other complaint is it does jack with my screen resolution every time I plug it in and bring it back and moves, you know, that ends up like shifting windows over a little bit. So I have to move them back every time. But overall, very well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't really had too many issues with the screen res. Once I got it set up and got it working, it seemed to stick every time I plug it back in. But
cool. I have to play with it a little bit more.
Yep. Give it a go. And in a weird thing that happened to me this week. I had, do you remember American Gladiators?
The show I didn't watch, yes.
Okay. A lot of people who listen to this show probably watched American Gladiators. I personally was a super fan. Well, the guy that was Nitro on American Gladiators came over to my studio and he hung out for a couple hours and I'm helping him with a new project of his. Mm-hmm. But it's just really cool to have Nitro in your office shooting the shit and hanging out. And he noticed that my posture was terrible. Because I've been standing here. So he told me to get one of these posture correctors that he's got, that he's using because he's coming back from back surgery. So I got the Aegon Posture Corrector Clavicle Brace Support Strap Posture Brace Medical Device to improve bad posture, thoracic kyphosis, shoulder alignment, upper back pain relief for men and women at Amazon for a whopping $20.
Right.
Thing's awesome. It's just a strap.
We reviewed one of these that was internet connected. Remember? We talked, I think, in Moron of the Week or something. It was this with an app.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, the one that there's like the sticker that you put right on the back of your spine and you're supposed to make you stand up straight. Yeah, that this one actually, it's a strap and it pulls your shoulders back. You can't. Mm. You don't need an app. You can't move your shoulders forward. And for $20, it's great. My back feels really good. I've been using it for a couple, you know, 2 days now. And if you've got, you know, posture problems, grab one of these things. They're cheap and they do what they say. It just pulls your shoulders into alignment and you stand up straight because you have no choice. and when you take it off, you still find yourself standing up straighter because you're building the muscles to, you know, stay in alignment. I like this thing a lot.
Okay. Might check one out. Actually, I would probably wear one while I was podcasting because I do find myself tending to slump forward a bit while podcasting.
I just wear mine all day.
Right.
That's all.
Well, there's a whole new realm of apps, Jason. I don't know if you've heard this term before. I didn't until I read this article, but they're called dApps.
DApps?
Dapps. Decentralized apps. Apps on the blockchain, Jason.
I have heard of apps on the blockchain for sure, but I didn't know they were called dApps.
They're called dApps. dApps have been one of the most hotly anticipated developments of blockchain, the technology that underpins Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Investors have poured billions of dollars into the effort, yet According to the Wall Street Journal, they remain largely inaccessible to the average internet user. Basically, they have not caught on because nobody gives a crap. They are basically just smartphone apps that come in many flavors, from social media to gaming to finance. Proponents of the platforms have said that they have the potential to change the way the internet works, bypassing gatekeepers and allowing users to connect to each other directly. I know you've heard of one of the big ones, CryptoKitties.
We reviewed CryptoKitties when it first came out, and
yes.
And every time it was mentioned afterwards, I was always laughing because it basically broke the Ethereum blockchain for a while because there were so many transactions going over it. But it was a shark fin. It lasted like a week, and everybody's like, this is dumb.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And then quit.
Developers have created more than 2,700 dApps that have enough data to be trackable, according to a website called State of the Dapps.
Oh, God.
Only three of them have more than 10,000 daily active users. The most active dApp on any platform most recently was Endless Dice, a gambling dApp on the EOS platform that had 3,400 active users on Wednesday. CryptoKitties, which they mentioned, first got a lot of people in and is dead now. It's completely faded. They count only a few hundred daily uses, and the digital cats sell with a median price of about $12 now, according to a site called Kitty Sales. Dragon is currently
Kitty Sales.
Yes, there are sites for all of these things. I don't get it. I don't get apps on the blockchain yet. It doesn't make any sense, and it's stupid, and nobody's using them. So dap you.
Somebody quickly call Gwyneth Paltrow and Gary Vee and get him back in the studio for Planet of the Dapps.
Yes, Planet of the Dapps, coming soon.
Hey, nobody will watch that show, too.
Brick-a-brack.
This is a bit clickbait, but at least I thought it was interesting clickbait. There's a link in our show notes to DazedDigital.com, which has Bjork, Jeff Goldblum, David Lynch, and more on what happens when we die. Basically, they just pulled some quotes from old random interviews with them talking about what they think happens, and I just enjoyed reading it.
If they asked me, it'd be a very simple, short article. Nothing.
Nothing.
Yes. Oblivion. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you know where I stand. I found this one over on Wired. Mackenzie Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
And the pitfalls of tech philanthropy. Well, Mackenzie is going to give away half of her $36 billion. She's joined up for the Giving Pledge.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see how this plays out. Problem is, it's tough to give away a lot of money, apparently, if you want to, you know, try and do it right.
Yes.
And to drive that point home, Wired had another article 2 days later called Five Mistakes Mackenzie Bezos and Other Mega Donors Should Avoid. Because apparently it turns out, being a business person, and I don't know how big of a business person Mackenzie Bezos is. I don't know her past, if she was part of Amazon or just married
into
it.
She's quite clever.
She was. Okay, good. But it goes through all the different ways where business people suck at running a nonprofit.
Well, look, I know this is going to be shocking to everyone, but if you announce that you're giving away money, a lot of unsavory types of people are going to try to get it.
Well, yeah, obviously.
That's how human nature works. So, yeah, there's a huge vetting process that has to go into this if you want to really do some good and not get screwed and not just give money away to people that do horrible things.
Right. But it's changing your mindset and talking to the people who actually run successful nonprofits is what they should do. But all they're doing is talking to their other rich friends who say, yeah, I tried to give away a bunch of money and it's harder than it looks. And it sucks. You know.
Well, go to patreon.com/GOG. We make it really easy for you to give away your money.
Seriously, Mackenzie, come on, hook a brother up.
Yes.
And I found this one over on Medium. I'm a former elite athlete, and I call BS on tech's obsession with working long hours, by Jason Shen. Now, this is the long and the short of this article, is just stop working so goddamn much. Take a break, and you're going to be sane. You're going to actually get more done than you would if you worked 80-hour weeks, which you and I know.
Yes, we know that. And I actually just saw an article recently, and if I would have seen this in there, I would have put it in there. But there's a really interesting study that just came out that said the 4-day work week is actually way more efficient than a 5-day work week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 37 Signals has been doing that for years. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that they're going to put burnout in the next. What's that book that tells you how crazy you are? It's an acronym that I can never remember. Well, that one too. That's a different book, but yeah, it's going to be a disorder called burnout, and it's a thing.
Yeah,
you can be diagnosed with it, but you and I know this is something we've talked about on the show, but I'm glad that everybody is talking about it more and more now, because there are a lot of people that are on the hustle train. Got to hustle. Gary Vee is, you know, the de facto leader of all that shit. and it's stupid and people need to, you know, get a clue.
You don't need a side hustle. You need a side nap.
Yeah, seriously. Go buy a copy of Pazzizz and take a nap. I do it every day.
Pokemon Sleep. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Get Pokemon Go Plus Plus or whatever the hell it is. But take a nap, people, and just relax. It's all good. And I put this one in here for you, Brian. Victory for fathers in a parental leave case that could be a harbinger.
Too fucking late.
Well, the problem with you is you ran the company, so you could have given yourself more time off.
Well, I basically did, to be honest.
Yeah, you kind of did.
I just kind of cut back on all my work. So my company suffered a bit, but, you know, my kid's happy.
Well, your company suffered so much that you shut it down.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah. All the crypto kitties I'm getting from podcasting, you know, I'm cool.
Yep, there you go. Crypto. Mm-hmm. Crypto vacation. That's
look, every other country in the goddamn world does this. Step up, America. Stop being so stupid.
Closing shout out.
And speaking of stupid, I didn't know where else to put this because we didn't have Moron of the Week this week, but I feel compelled that we simply have to say this out loud. Yes, natural gas has a new name, Jason. According to the Department of Energy.
Okay.
Freedom gas.
Why?
They're promoting fossil fuels to go hand in hand for the Trump administration, and they took it to a new level on Tuesday with a press release touting natural gas as freedom gas full of, and I like how the author of this article put this in, I feel stupid even typing this, molecules of U.S. freedom. Yes, they are promoting gas from Texas as opposed to overseas.
So every time I fart now, I can say, have some freedom gas.
Freedom gas.
Can you feel the freedom?
I just feel stupider every day in this country.
Oh, man. Well, I've got a shout out to friend of the show, Bob Fogarty, because yesterday he dropped me a heads up that Good Omens dropped a day early.
Yes, you wrote me as well. I'm assuming you watched an episode.
I watched an episode. Yes, I did.
Just one?
Yes, I'm taking my time with this one because I waited 30 years for this thing to come out, you know, for this thing to be a thing. So after watching the first episode, did you watch one?
I did not. I finished. Well, we're already like we're teasing our media candy segment. I actually finished Fleabag season two instead. I wanted to have that done before I moved on to Good Omens.
Well, I watched the first episode of Good Omens and it is perfect. It is perfection.
Okay.
From what I wanted from the book. It is perfection. I think the flaming swords are a little short, but on the other hand, everything else was absolute perfection. And that's why I'm going to take my time with it because, man, it made me happy.
By media candy on Tuesday, he will have watched all six episodes.
Nah, probably not. Probably not. Maybe, but probably not. So I highly recommend everybody check it out and we'll have more of a review on the next episode when Brian gets around to watching one or six.
I'll watch one. Until next time, I'm Brian Schulmeister.
And I'm Jason DeFilippo. Thanks for listening to Grumpy Old Geeks. To support the show and keep us on the air, go to patreon.com/GOG. Toss us a buck a month and we'll love you forever. If you'd like to give a one-time or recurring donation, go to GOG.show and click the PayPal button in the sidebar. Show notes for the episode are at GOG.show/349. From there, you can find links to old episodes, leave feedback, ask questions, and get links to stuff we like. And if you are listening to the show in the Overcast player, please keep them stars coming. We love watching the charts. It's just so much fun. Until next time, stay grumpy.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.